This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Billy Collins, is taking on his new position as U.S. Poet Laureate in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks. We invited him back to Fresh Air to read some new and old poems. He has a new book called Sailing Alone Around the Room, New and Selected Poems. Collins is a distinguished professor of English at Lehman College of the City University of New York and a visiting writer at Sarah Lawrence College. I asked him if the terrorist attacks are affecting how he sees his role as poet laureate.
Well, it's interesting. In the days following the attack, there was a kind of surge of poetry activity. And it seemed that there was a kind of need for poetry and people turning to me as the laureate for reactions to this. I found it, stepping back from it, I found it interesting that in a time of national crisis that we don't turn to the novel. You know, we don't say, well, we should all go out and see a movie, and that would be kind of a make us feel better. We turn to poetry. And it's interesting to put that next to the reputation of poetry as being the sort of poor little match girl of literature, you know, the neglected genre that that has a tiny audience. But it seems that in times like these, poetry stands up very well. I find that the following the events of September 11th, clearly there was and continues to be a torrent of language on the part of the coming from the media, and it's as if this language is trying to fill a hole somewhere that was left in America. And I don't think that language ever will fill that hole. But I think poetry stands apart, you know, in its own space with its own integrity. And poetry, as clearly one of its oldest functions, has been to, is a place for grief to go, a place to ritualize grief and to make it possible to express in some coherent way feelings that seem to resist expression. Denise Levertov has a wonderful line about that. She says, grief is a hole you walk around in the daytime, and at night you fall into it.
Mm. I've been reading, you know, a lot of artists and journalists writing about how the impact of September 11th and this war on terrorism is affecting what artists want to say in their work and what filmgoers and music listeners and readers want. And I'm wondering if you've thought about this a lot, like how our inner lives and how what we want from art is changed at a time like this.
I think we want the same things that we always wanted. I don't think, as I've heard, the irony is now passé. I feel irony is very much a part of our basic to our freedom of expression, you know. And I think also that occasions like this can create deadeningly false kinds of sincerity if we forget irony and humor and also forget the everyday. I think that's the most important. In a catastrophe like this, I mean, the event certainly is too big and too stupendous for a single poem or painting or whatever to get its arms around. And because I think poetry particularly is private, it does announce personal feeling, and it does create a chapel, if you will, for the importance of everyday experience. And I think poetry should continue to do that. I think all poems stand against the wholesale murders that took place on September 11th. And I think that's more important than a poem that would be about that event, that would respond to that event in a mistakenly direct way. After all, you don't want to read a poem that, you know, delivers the news or makes the announcement that wholesale murder is morally bad.
Right, you didn't need the poem to tell you that.
You didn't need the poem to tell you that.
Maybe no. The terrorists did, but.
That's true. Well, the terrorists have gone. I mean, they've done something that is they've moved beyond language. You know, they.
Yes, I'll agree to that.
And I think there's a trouble with. I mean, we use metaphor to handle If anything, metaphor is in jeopardy, because we use metaphor to handle and explain experience. We try to compare something that's hard to understand to something that we know a little better. But I remember someone compared the collapse, that kind of sickening, heart-wrenching, architecturally spectacular collapse of the World Trade Center as looking like a cigarette burning down at high speed. But, of course, that you have to realize that there are thousands of people inside that cigarette. So at that point, the metaphor seems absurd, inadequate, even offensive.
No, it just seems like a bad metaphor, because
yeah, maybe
a cigarette turns to smoke. It doesn't collapse in tons and tons and tons of rubble. I mean, even just as a that's just an awful metaphor in every way.
I'm reminded of a scene in that movie. I think it's called Going Home or Coming Home. It was a Vietnam War movie. And the character is on leave, and he joins up with his wife, I think in Japan, for some R&R. And when they finally have a moment alone, she turns to him. He's just come back from Vietnam, taking a break from Vietnam. And she says, "Well, what's it like?" And he looks at her in a kind of shocked way and says, "It's not like anything." And that's also another moment where comparison falls down and where there's no file for it. We have no file to put this. And that's why I think it's still in the air and will continue to be in the air. And will probably cast a shadow over the page of many writers.
My guest is our new poet laureate, Billy Collins. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Billy Collins is my guest, the United States new poet laureate. He also has a new book of poems. It's called Sailing Alone Around the Room, New and Selected Poems. Billy, you were talking about the importance of still having poems that speak to everyday life. Is there a poem like that of yours you'd like to read?
Well, this is a poem called Morning. Why do we bother with the rest of the day? The swale of the afternoon, the sudden dip into evening, then night with his notorious perfumes, his many-pointed stars. This is the best, throwing off the light covers, feet on the cold floor, and buzzing around the house on espresso, maybe a splash of water on the face, a palm full of vitamins, but mostly buzzing around the house on espresso, dictionary and atlas open on the rug, the typewriter waiting for the key of the head, a cello on the radio, and, if necessary, the windows, trees, 50, 100 years old out there, heavy clouds on the way, and the lawn steaming like a horse in the early morning.
Billy, have you gone through a period of feeling both almost, you know, like relieved to be alive and guilty about feeling quite that way, that you should be feeling sad and not feeling that sense of relief?
No, I feel, I try to feel, this is something only a saint could sustain, but I try to maintain the feeling of gratitude. I think gratitude is the gratitude for existence, for daily experience, for being alive is at the core of so much poetry. And that poetry, so much of it, lyric poetry, reiterates the simple joy or the simple blunt fact of actually existing. That's my feeling about all haiku, just about. I mean, every haiku, I think, is essentially saying the same thing. It might be about a cherry tree or a frog jumping into a pond, but these incidental and seemingly peripheral observations are at their very heart are a declaration that I was here to see this. I existed. I saw this frog, period. And that sufficiency is, I think, part of the prayer of gratitude that a lot of poems offer.
You've also written some poems that are about death, but are also about life. I'm going to ask you to read one of them, and this is a poem called No Time. It was written pretty recently, I think too recently to be included in your new collection, Sailing Alone Around the Room. But I first read this poem a few months ago and quite like it. I'm going to ask you to read it for us.
No Time. In a rush this weekday morning, I tap the horn as I speed past the cemetery where my parents are buried side by side under a smooth slab of granite. Then all day long I think of him rising up to give me that look of knowing disapproval while my mother calmly tells him to lie back down.
When did you write that? And maybe you could tell us a little bit about the writing of the poem.
I think I wrote that in the car. That's one of these poems that just came out. I think I might have changed a word or two just for sound. But there is a road that goes by a cemetery where my parents are buried, and it's a road I travel sometimes and often feel compelled to stop and make a visit. But I did actually tap the horn. I just could feel that my father would feel that that was a rather inadequate acknowledgement of his passing. And that my mother, as usual, would step in to reassure him that the boy is okay. So I don't know. It's a little poem I'm fond of because I think it mixes two things I try to mix in a lot of poems, maybe not as successfully, which is something that's somewhat humorous and something that's somewhat sorrowful. The fact that my parents are buried there is a heavy bit of the poem, but the way I turn it into a kind of Thurber-esque marriage with the disapproving husband and the reassuring mother tries to leaven it with some lightness there, humor.
Reading that poem both before and after September 11th, I had slightly different reactions. I mean, after September 11th, I started thinking about how the people who died before it missed such a fundamental change in American life. I mean, I know several people who died this year, and to think that they left right before they'll never know how everything changed.
I felt the same way, and I felt it pretty immediately. I felt, especially my parents, I felt that they were spared, that they did not have to see that. And that almost they, I think the people who died prior to September 11th, to me, insofar as I thought about them, felt like children that had been, that I was happy that they'd been protected and spared that that experience.
I'm going to ask you to choose a poem here.
Well, I have a poem called The Parade, which is about simply death as a natural process. The parade. How exhilarating it was to march along the great boulevards in the sun flash of trumpets and under all the waving flags, the flag of desire, the flag of ambition. So many of us streaming along, all of humanity really, moving in perfect sync, yet each lost in the room of a private dream. How stimulating the scenery of the world, the rows of the roadside trees, the huge blue sheet of the sky. How endless it seemed until we veered off the broad turnpike into a pasture of high grass, heading toward the dizzying cliffs of mortality. Generation after generation, we have shouldered forward under the gliding clouds until we high step off the sharp lip into space. So I should not have to remind you that little time is given here to rest on a wayside bench, to stop and bend to the wildflowers, or to study a bird on a branch, not when the young keep shoving us from behind, not when the old are tugging us forward, pulling on our arms with all their feeble strength.
Tell us about when you wrote that.
I think I came up, I mean, often a poem is just, well, for me, maybe it's my limits of my imagination, that I take one metaphor and just kind of extend it as far as I can. So it just occurred to me to use a parade as kind of the parade of life without exactly falling into that cliche. And I think there's a sense of that, you know, there is a natural progression, right? Your parents die before you do. They're supposed to. And your children die after you. And that logic, to get back to September 11th, which keeps intruding on any conversation anyone is having these days, that people went grotesquely out of order, the order, the natural progression of the parade toward the grave was grotesquely violated.
Billy Collins is my guest. He's the new U.S. Poet Laureate. He also has a new collection of poems called Sailing Alone Around the Room, New and Selected Poems. You listen to a lot of jazz, and the recordings that you listen to, the musicians who you like most, show up in a lot of your poems. I'm going to ask you to read one of those poems. It's called Nightclub. Tell us something about it before you read it.
I actually, jazz is usually on in the house, and I write about jazz only because it tends to kind of leak into the writing as I'm going along. I usually don't sit down and say, I'm going to write about jazz. It was one afternoon, Johnny Hartman was playing in the background, and I kept hearing, I was writing something else, but I kept hearing words like beautiful and foolish and love, and love and beauty and foolishness, and that they just seem to be kind of revolving words, almost as you would have in a sestina, although I didn't have the patience to write one of those. And then that's the way the poem got started. It's called Nightclub. You are so beautiful, and I am a fool to be in love with you, is a theme that keeps coming up in songs and poems. There seems to be no room for variation. I have never heard anyone sing, I am so beautiful, and you are a fool to be in love with me, even though this notion has surely crossed the minds of women and men alike. You are so beautiful, too bad you are a fool is another one you don't hear. Or, you are a fool to consider me beautiful. That one you will never hear, guaranteed. For no particular reason, this afternoon, I am listening to Johnny Hartman, whose dark voice can curl around the concepts of love, beauty, and foolishness like no one else's can. It feels like smoke curling up from a cigarette someone left burning on a baby grand piano around 3 o'clock in the morning, smoke that billows up into the bright lights, while out there in the darkness, some of the beautiful fools have gathered around little tables to listen, some with their eyes closed, others leaning forward into the music as if it were holding them up, or just twirling the loose ice in a glass, slipping by degrees into a rhythmic dream. Yes, there is all this foolish beauty born beyond midnight that has no desire to go home, especially now when everyone in the room is watching the large man with the tenor sax that hangs from his neck like a golden fish. He moves forward to the edge of the stage and hands the instrument down to me and nods that I should play. So I put the mouthpiece to my lips and blow into it with all my living breath. We are all so foolish, my long bebop solo begins by saying, so damn foolish, we have become beautiful without even knowing it.
You were telling me you usually end your readings with that poem. Why do you choose that poem to end with?
I think it says something almost sentimental at the end, but I think I really mean what I said there at the end, and perhaps the whole poem is a sort of elaborate setup that allows me to say that we are beautiful. It could be that corny.
Billy Collins, thank you so much for talking with us and for reading for us.
It's been all my pleasure, Terry.
Billy Collins is the new Poet Laureate of the United States. His new book is called Sailing Alone Around the Room, New and Selected Poems.